C1PR. Number 9A.
Now, as I have said in my original circular letter, I want to devote a whole afternoon for repeating what we have been investigating the last time. And I want to do that in order that we can consolidate more or less what we have been pondering during the last 8 weeks. As I have pointed out last time, I felt that I would like to put these meetings under the big stone of life as spirit, in distinction perhaps to the tone of life as mind. That is, that we have been studying the word of life for quite some time, perhaps for years, and it was perhaps mostly or primarily a study from the point of view of studying, of mind, of investigation, of searching. It all has the tone of mind, of making clear into our mind what the Word of God really means and implies. But I feel that one has to be careful that we realize that this world of life should not only be viewed from the point of view of mind, of investigation, of study, but that it should be viewed as a second step from the point of view of spirit, of the worship of spirit, of the warmth of spirit, of the pondering which spirit gives us, so that we begin to ponder and to love all that what we have been studying, and all that which has become clear into our mind, that we take that into our consciousness and worship it, love it, keep it near, to conceive of it and welcome it, to hug it, to value it, to carry it around as the most valuable thing on earth. As we do that, we go on to the step, or to the second day of spirit, of worshipping. And as we know, only spirit gives birth. That only spirit gives birth. But spirit is not just a word. Spirit is a spiritual attitude. Spirit, the worship of spirit, is not just an arduous study. That's the point of view of mind. But as we love what we have studied, as we love our vision, as we ponder our vision, as we value that vision, that's the second day. That's the worshipping of it. And only the worship of spirit gives birth. Spirit gives birth. Only that begins to give life to what we have seen in a visionary way. And all we want is really that all that what we have been studying during all these years, that begins to live in us, that it gives a new birth in us. And we must see the law behind it, and I will come back to it, we must see the law behind it, that this birth is going to take place only as we worship spiritually. You see, there is an enormous difference between studying and learning any science on one side and studying and pondering or understanding the science of being. In any other science which we may contemplate, whatever that science is, we can do that with thinking. If we are clever enough, we can learn chemistry. If we are clever enough, we can learn the science of physics. If we are clever enough, we can learn any other science. and all what is demanded to fulfill those sciences is to go through the 7 days from a mental point of view, from the point of view of mind, of intelligent thinking, of devoted thinking, of consistent thinking, of systematic thinking, of practical thinking, you see, soul thinking. And it can be proved in those science on that ground of thinking, and so be fulfilled on the ground of thinking. But that applies only to any other science, but not to the science of being. The science of being is much vaster, much bigger than that. You see, a physician or a chemist or a physicist, see, he can fulfill only on the point, from the standpoint of intelligent thinking, he can fulfill his physical science. He can bring new discoveries to our age, and he can prove those discoveries. He can make them work. But he himself doesn't have to do anything but change his thinking, but use his thinking. It's all from the point of view of mind, small m, as a small symbolism of the divine mind. But he himself, he can go on doing in his life just what he wants. He can be a rotten man, humanly and morally. He can be treacherous. He can be dishonest. He can do all sorts. He doesn't need to change. He can be unhappy and so on. But that doesn't touch his realm of science. But that is not so in the science of being. The science of being demands a whole man. And it demands that not only the thinking of the man is changed. That would only be a change from the point of view of mind. But what we have to achieve is the change from the point of view of spirit, the new birth. A change from the point of view of soul, a complete reformation of our whole being. We have to go through those 7 days from the point of view of principle and become honest in every detail of our life. See, and so on. And we can see that the science of being we are studying is a much, much vaster proposition than any other science. An infinitely vaster proposition. But it also makes us realize that we have to be careful that we don't take over the method of ordinary science, of natural science, and think that by taking over that method, only that method, to the science of being, we can arrive at harmony. Because if we only take over how to change our mind, how to look at things different than we looked at them before, we only change our mind. But the commandment is that we change not only our mind, but our heart and our soul and our whole being and our whole life and our whole stature, so that we have quite a new fullness of being. So this is a point which I like to point out from time to time, just to get awake and aware that we consider also other standpoints than just the standpoint of mind, of discovering, of searching, of studying, of seeking, but that at a moment perhaps we take the second step and have that woman sense which conceives of what has been discovered. The male sense is the discoverer, but it must be coupled with the woman sense, which takes that discovery and loves it, and takes it in and keeps it warm and marvels at it, just adores it, the adorable one, until that whole vision becomes alive in our consciousness and in our whole being. Mr. Shetty says that the life-giving quality of mind is spirit. That which gives life to mind is spirit. And we have seen last time how through various biblical symbolism that has been pointed out time and time again, that unless we don't go further than mind, there are no fruits of spirit. That which gives birth to our vision of mind is the worship of spirit. And so we also see this coupling of the masculine and feminine sense. You see, in mind speaks, and so we hear the all infinite mind. And so as long as we just listen to a talk, we only take the standpoint of mind. We listen, and we take it in mentally first. Something may touch us which says to us, go home and keep it for yourself warm until it is big enough and strong enough that it can speak for itself. And so it may awake at once the second standpoint of spirit, of worshipping that which one has heard. But unless one does not worship that which one has heard in a talk, in a class, in a meeting like this, and ponders it, and cultures it, and ponders it, and goes over it, and concentrates on it, and gives time and energy and consecration to it, it is not lived, it doesn't begin to live, it doesn't begin to give birth. Now, perhaps you remember, Mr. Dawley, how at one time he pointed out again and again in his verbatim report and in Oxford the fact that we can view the days of creation from different standpoints. For instance, in the Oxford 1948, he brought it out rather clearly. He said that the 7 days of creation viewed from the standpoint of mind are a line of light, whereas the 7 days of creation viewed from the standpoint of spirit are an order. And then he goes on and views from soul and from principle and so on. I just want to take the first two. See, he pointed out at that time, it was during 3 or 4 months in 48, he pointed out it time and time again, and whenever one met him, he was talking about that. And I never could understand it until recently, what he really meant. And he just means this, what I felt was the point which we want to consider, that as long as we just study the 7 days of creation as a study, we view it from the standpoint of mind. It's study. You know that mind is all that has to do with intelligent research. And as long as we do that, he says, it's only a line of light. It's only, I would say, an ordered light. It's only showing how each idea really leads logically to the next idea, how each day leads logically to the second day, and the second day logically to the third day, and logically, that's the line of life. But, he says, when one considers them from the point of spirit, it becomes order. Now, order implies values. There can be no order without values. And so, when one views the days of creation from the point of view of spirit, as we made now view the chapter on prayer from the point of view of life as spirit, we begin to see that they can only be really grasped if one takes in the values of these days and goes along the values of these days. As one reflects the values of these days. So if we view the textbook, or now let's say our subject which we have been considering, on the chapter on prayer, which also shows the 7 days of creation in the language of today, if we view them only from the point of view of mind, where we say, yes, I'm quite interested to see if I can see where the subject changes. Yes, I'm quite interested to see where the subtones start and where they end. And where we feel, yes, I have seen that now I have it. That's only the standpoint of mind. And one has a view of how the chapter is laid out. But that's only a line of light. It has only enlightened our mentality. But it hasn't changed us. It hasn't yet changed us. In order that it changes us, we have to go to the second viewpoint of spirit, where these seven subjects become values, ordered values, where we begin to embody values, values of searching, values of worshipping and adoration, values of reformation and of keeping the rule and of keeping them day in, day out. See, they become values, and that order. It's rather difficult to explain the difference between the line of light and order, and whenever I don't know how to explain it, I ask Peggy. Sorry, Peggy. But she explained it very nicely and simply. She said, well, you see, if you have 100 men on a field, and the major sergeant just whistles and all fall into line, all what you see is a line. But you don't know by just looking at it what constitutes that line. If those 100 men are in a line according to the value of, say, age, or height, or of rank, or of any other value, they can be in one line on the fact of some values, on the height or so and so and so. You see, it's quite, then you have order. Then you have a line and an order which is grounded on values. Now, this is just an example of what we are witnessing when we go through the chapter on prayer or any other chapter. That as long as we just use our best mental qualities, all we will find out is an outlay of light, a layout of light, where we can say, well, naturally, this is mind as spirit, and so on. Then this is spirit, and this is spirit as mind, and spirit as spirit, and spirit as self. Just saying that, and perhaps even grasping it mentally. But what does it do? It is doing a lot. It is doing a lot. It is clearing up first our concept about the whole thing. It's clearing it up. And it gives a clear perception and puts in some classification. But then we have to make it our own. And it has to become values. And so our life must get ordered according to these values. And we will see that time and time again. Now, so much about the introduction. We have been considering the chapter on prayer, and I hear that you have done a lot of work in answering the questionnaire. And so I will just go over that questionnaire and just give some views as I look at it. But I want to point out very definitely that which I see in it is now what I see it, and what I see in it at present, and that it must not be the only thing which is in it, and that you have your perfect right of individual revelation, and so don't be disturbed if perhaps I point out different things which you have not been aware of. That doesn't mean that you haven't done your work properly, but it just may help to elaborate and broaden out the view of this first chapter. The scriptural note begins with that very wonderful verse, which says, "Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them." And question one was asking, can you see what they are and what synonyms they characterize? And I guess you have seen that very easily, because the days of creation really point to that. It is just showing the tone of mind, spirit, soul. It is showing that every research into being starts with a prayerful attitude. What is this prayerful attitude? What is this attitude which has access to being? Well, she shows here the law ruling the access to being and says, well, first you must desire. And we have mind, the first day of creation, which wants to know, which desires, which wants to know what is, how God is. And then it says, and ye desire what ye pray, believe that ye receive them. You see, you get the biblical term for believing firmly, for putting something substantial into this desire, not to have it superficially, but to have it substantial, to put some weight into that desire. And then the third day says, and you get it, the dry land appears. So it gives a sense of the mind, spirit, soul. Now, see, this is not just a verse, a nice verse, which is explained here. Mrs. Eddy was using very typical verses to indicate the main attitude of a whole chapter. Now, we have only 16 chapters, and so if we grasp the scriptural note and the meaning of the scriptural note of the first chapter, we grasp the attitude of the first chapter. In other words, we grasp already 1/16 of the whole being. It's a lot, you see. It's an enormous lot. It's not just an explication of a nice biblical verse, but it is one of the 16 main pillars of our whole being, which we try to grasp here. And naturally it is the beginning of those 16 pillars, the beginning, we said, how do I have access to being? What inner mental attitude do I need to have in order to have a chance to enter in to the Holy of Holies? So it is one of the main attitudes, the main in, can you grasp what I mean with the inward attitude, with the is that the right word, Harold? Einstellung, the right Einstellung, the real inward attitude, which says, if I have that inward attitude, it's the key that opens up the Holiest of Holies. And that attitude is always the same, no matter if I pray because I have to solve a problem, no matter if I open the textbook with the desire to know more about the textbook and know more about being, always when I approach any subject and any problem, is it no matter if it's something in the positive or in the negative, if I approach it, I must have a right approach to it. And that right approach here is nicely depicted and says, unless I have a real desire, a longing to know God. And second, unless I really put something into that thing, I really believe in it, if I have really put some substance, some value in that desire, unless I do that, nothing will come forth. Nothing will crystallize in my research. The problem finds no answer, so to say. So I feel this sense here is really the sense which has always governed us when I look back all those years where we have been, for instance, studying the synonymous terms. Well, how were we studying the synonymous terms? Well, We found the meaning and the beauty of the synonymous terms only when we were studying them with a deep desire. And when we really put everything into that desire, when we consecrated time, energy and love and everything to that research, we believed that there is an answer to it and something big in it, and then it began to dawn and to crystallize and take form. So this introduction really gives us the attitude for every approach towards a divine subject. Every approach to a divine subject. Now, I was asking you a further question too. Does this mean that all prayers are answered? Well, the biblical text, and we have always to take that in account, that the biblical text is never so exact in language as the textbook is, because science and health is the exact explication of what the Bible carries as a secret in its pages. So, the biblical verse may hint or may say, well, whatever you desire, if you firmly believe in it, you will get it. And so, it's quite natural that the thought is rather widespread, that if I desire something and I firmly believe in it, and just try to get everything, every other thought out of my consciousness, that I get what I desire. Now, is that true? We have to be very clear about that. Right from the beginning, well, can I expect that everything which I may desire with earnestness, that I get it? And so Mrs. Eddy comes as an explanation and enlarges on that biblical verse and says, well, be cautious. Not every desire will be answered. It all depends if we ask aright or if we ask amiss. And as you have been going through the text, you may have found one or the other. There are not perhaps many very straightforward textual answers to it, but one or two are very clear, where it says, well, it's not always right for you to get what you desire. It is a question, do you desire the right thing? See, so the textbook is so wonderful. The Bible really doesn't so clearly interpret what is a real desire. Leaves it and says, if you desire and you believe in it, you get it. And all disillusionment that has come out of it is beyond words, because one has desired so many things and they didn't happen. So here she comes and says, well, be careful. That desire must be a scientific desire, a scientifically clarified desire, or else we can have no right, we have no right to expect that this desire is going to fulfill itself.